You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
From Milwaukee to Marshfield, where passion meets purpose and policy meets people, this is the Maggie Dawn Show.
We, as Republicans, as Democrats, as independents, as liberals and conservatives,
get ready to challenge the status quo with a fresh perspective on the issues that matter to you.
If it was bad before today, I cannot believe how much worse it has gotten.
If we don't band together and protest, our democracy will be gone.
Breaking down the complex world of policy and politics with clarity, conviction, and just the right amount of fun.
And I'm freaked the frickin' frack out.
Lawyer, economist, and fearless advocate for the truth, here is Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, everybody. Happy Tuesday. My day started off on a positive foot. I was at the Brewers game last night. Got to watch the crew put up a big win against those dastardly Houston Astros. Never liked the Cheaters so much. So it was good to see the crew put up a big win. Got to see Yelich hit a home run. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show. Hope, again, your day is going well. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. We got a fine program lined up for you. In short order this afternoon, in the 4 o'clock hour, I'm going to be joined by former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel. We're going to get into Donald Trump's nominee to be the U.S. Attorney for the D.C. District. You probably will not be able to get your head fully around how truly grotesquely incompetent this man is. And I could think of no one better than Mr. Jim Santel, a former U.S. attorney himself, to talk about who Ed Martin is and, more importantly, who he isn't, filling one of the most important U.S. attorney roles in the country if Trump has his way. Why you should be concerned, we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the Supreme Court reinstituting in one of its emergency rulings today Donald Trump's ban on transgender service members in our military. We'll discuss that. So much coming. We've got special guests popping in as well. It's time for Milwaukee as a microcosm. We got Jeremy Janine coming in this hour. And of course, because it's Tuesday, we got Dan Schaefer, political editor of Civic Media, joining us at 5:30 for the state slate, discussing some of the new legislation that Republicans have introduced in our state's legislature, as well as some of the Joint Finance Committee's opposition to key items in Governor Evers' budget proposal. Because, ladies and gentlemen, it is state biennial budget season. But let's get into it. Congressman Mark Pocan, going viral on the socials today. He was in a House congressional hearing asking questions of Scott Bessent, who is our Treasury Secretary. I'm just going to let the clip play for itself. And Jacob, when we've heard just about enough, I'll start talking to you and we'll wrap it up. But this is pretty juicy. I'm going to let this go for a while. I want to point this out. Scott Bessent is a smart man. Scott Bessent knows all of the answers to the very simple questions that Congressman Mark Pocan is asking him in this clip. I want you to ask yourselves, why the hell will the guy not just answer the damn question? Let's take a listen.
So my concern is on the tariffs. Who pays tariffs, Mr. Secretary? No. Answer the questions I asked, please. I only have 5 minutes. Who pays tariffs?
Sorry?
Mr. Secretary, please.
Excuse me.
The question is very simply, who pays tariffs, Mr. Chairman? I'd like him to answer that question. He wants to answer other questions.
Well, Congressman, if the exporters, they dislike tariffs so much, why wouldn't they, if... I think what you're trying to get me to say...
Did you remember the question? I'm not sure you did. Who pays tariffs?
It's a very complicated question.
Reclaiming my time. People pay tariffs, right? Reclaiming my time, Mr. Secretary. You clearly aren't going to answer. I'm not going to waste my time having you go, Mr. Secretary, Mr. Chairman, I asked reclaiming my time.
Tariffs.
Mr. Chairman, and I asked to reclaim my time. Did I not? No, I said reclaiming my time because he's clearly not answering it. So, yeah, so as a small business owner, and unfortunately I'd like that time back since you failed to recognize me for 30 seconds. So I just recently from one of my suppliers got the tariff surcharge on things. And in addition to the tariff surcharge, guess what else got raised? American-made walnut plaques. That has nothing to do with tariffs, but companies take advantage and do that. So right now, we are getting screwed right and left because of the indiscriminate use of tariffs. That's the reality for Main Street. And you go off to Beverly Hills for private investor conferences and talk about crazy Ivan theories. Answer that. What is the crazy Ivan theory of tariffs that you mentioned at the summit?
Well, first of all, sir, I've had meetings with more than 50 small lenders. So I want to clarify that. I would also say that in game theory, strategic uncertainty, of which you seem to like the name Crazy Ivan.
Well, it's your words, correct? Didn't you use Crazy Ivan at the...
Well, you've used it five times. And
answer the question, Mr. Chairman.
I am saying the strategic uncertainty is part of negotiations. That should we say, here's what we'll accept. Please take this.
Okay, I've got your answer. Thank you. I'm going to reclaim my time again. So for a small business, we don't have that luxury, right? When the ports are empty in California and we can't get goods and people are stocking up for Christmas goods, Crazy Ivan is great for, please don't take this offense, really rich people like you. But for people like me, it's not, right? That's what makes small businesses fail. That's what makes people lose their jobs. That's what makes the stock market tank. So I'll ask one more time, who pays tariffs?
Sir, the history would show that it is a complicated mix of who pays the tariffs over various times.
So that's exactly the problem. If your answer, and you are a very educated person, you have a very impressive bio, cannot answer the question who pays tariffs because you won't answer that, and you say it's a complicated issue, it's not complicated. Consumers pay Trump's tariff tax. That's the reality.
Woohoo! Let's all cheer for Congressman Mark Pocan talking some sense, some plain language to a snake oil salesman. Scott Bessent knows damn well that when an importer here in the United States of America brings in a good or a subcomponent part from abroad and they have to pay the tariff on that good that they're importing here, they have to pass portion, if not all of that additional cost onto a consumer. And we're already seeing that consumers are purchasing less, that there will be pain points. We haven't even begun to get a flavor truly of what's going to happen. Thousands is a new number invented here on the Maggie Dawn Show this afternoon. Thousands of small businesses will end up filing for bankruptcy because their consumers will not buy their products with the additional Trump tax added on, and they cannot themselves absorb the margin. Now, this Crazy Ivan thing, as an economist, I want to talk about this. Scott Bessent, well, this is called strategic uncertainty. You don't go into negotiations and just tell the other side what you want. He's trying to argue that Donald Trump's completely flip-floppity, changes every gosh darn day tariff policy is somehow a good negotiating tactic. I'm here to tell you, as an economist, that what Scott Bessent is peddling, what the Trump apologists are peddling, is utter economic nonsense. Strategic uncertainty in negotiations also requires, at base, some sense from your counterparty that when you do come to an agreement, it will ultimately be honored. You see how those two things go together. You might engage in some strategic uncertainty, holding your cards close to your vest, not telling your counterparty what your final bottom line is. Sure, Yeah, that's part of negotiating, but no one wants to negotiate with an insane person or a person who lies like they draw oxygen in. It doesn't work. They will not reach agreement with you, and like the Chinese, they might not even bother coming to the bargaining table. Now, all of this is but pretext and context for yet another Donald Trump flip-flop on tariffs. First of all, do you not recall Howard Lutnick et al., all these different people saying, we're going to have 90 deals in 90 days. We got 25 deals on the table. They're coming to us. Donald Trump talking about all these countries kissing his butt, all of that, and how great all these deals were going to be. Well, today Donald Trump said, we're not doing any deals. What do we need to do deals for? We don't need them. They need us. Please, ladies and gentlemen, while you cannot trust a single thing that Donald Trump or any of his cabinet secretaries say about economic policy, what we can track in good faith and objectively from day to day is how the target constantly moves, how the justification for all of this chaos changes on a day-to-day basis, how he was going to make us all rich on January 21st, and now it's just a period of pain. All of this. Keep your eye on how the rationalizations, the justifications, and the overall talking points literally day to day change. This isn't deal making. This isn't negotiation. What this is real, true economic pain for the middle class and for small business owners, and the absolute callousness of Donald Trump and millionaires and billionaires like Howard Lutnick, Elon Musk, and Donald Trump to the plight of working people and farmers, especially family farmers here in Wisconsin. Absolutely terrible. Now, if that weren't bad enough, as I often say, of course, Senator Ron Johnson had to make things so much very, very worse. I don't know if Ron Johnson's trying to script some sort of biography of himself that's like, I'll say the most outlandish and, yes, cruel things and act as if it is completely reasonable policy. He did that yet again, an absolutely shocking headline coming out of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, how Ron Johnson is saying to so many Wisconsin families, forget you. I'm not worried about whether or not you have health insurance, whether or not you're healthy and well. All I care about is squeezing the federal budget down so that I can kill these critical programs that so many Wisconsinites rely upon, like Medicaid. I'm going to explain what Ron Johnson said when we come back. We've got Jeremy Janine joining us shortly for a little segment we like to call Milwaukee as Microcosm. As goes Milwaukee, so goes the state. Here is Ron Johnson's quote, because gross. The mistake people are making is that they're looking at programs that spend tens, hundreds of billions of dollars and saying, we can't touch that, can't touch that. I would go through 2,400 lines and go, justify spending. He goes on, we certainly shouldn't have a budget reconciliation that actually expands the deficit, and that appears to be the path that we are on. Balancing the federal budget must not come at the expense of those depend on these benefits, meaning Medicaid, for their health and economic security. Not what Ron Johnson thinks. He thinks we should just go ahead and cut the heck out of that Medicaid. People don't actually need that. Let them just dog-eat-dog it out. We'll talk more about that. We got Jeremy Janine coming in from Milwaukee as a microcosm. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
We'll be right back.
Welcome, everybody. My name is Maggie Don. You are listening to The Maggie Don Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Of course, we'd be listening to the Bodines, a Milwaukee-originating band, because it is time for Milwaukee as Microcosm with the founder and one of the leading journalists for Urban Milwaukee. We have this segment because oftentimes the things that are going on in Milwaukee are a bit of a precursor to issues that impact the whole state. And frankly, as we know, when Milwaukee's doing well, the whole state does well. We're in this together as Wisconsinites. There is no such thing as the urban-rural divide. Don't believe the hype. Jeremy, welcome back to the Maggie Don Show. I'm so glad to have you because this is some pretty significant news that we need to tackle today.
Yeah, we have in Milwaukee, we have a vacant master lock plant. Everyone probably knows Master Lock. They make padlocks and all kinds of security stuff. You might not have known they're made in Milwaukee, and they were up until last year. Company was increasingly outsourcing things to China and Mexico. Well, now they pulled the plug on their Milwaukee plant at 32nd and Center. And the big news, and how this connects to the rest of Wisconsin, is they sold it to a St. Louis company that has holdings in another Wisconsin city.
It's fascinating. Is this being viewed positively or not? Are people looking to see what might come next? That vacant Master Lock campus, really on the near northwest side, just off of Capitol, if I recall correctly, that's been an issue for quite some time.
Yeah, it's about 26 acres, so we're talking something very large. If you're trying to, like, what is 26 acres? Far larger than a high school campus. It's a 400,000 square feet of buildings, and then Master Lock had acquired all this property around it. I haven't seen anyone that's really super excited. This development firm out of St. Louis is the Commercial Development Corporation. You can remember them because they're the CDC,
the other CDC.
they build themselves as the largest brownfield redeveloper in the country, and that's exactly what this plant is. But when we look at what's happening in Janesville, that is a red light flashing, a warning sign, if there ever was one.
And tell folks a little bit more about what's going on in Janesville.
So in 2008, Janesville long had a General Motors plant that built Suburbans, Tahoes, big SUVs. That closed amidst the Great Recession. And then I think it was 2018, CDC, the other CDC, came in and bought the plant and had grand visions of redeveloping it. And they demolished the buildings. And it's 10 times the size of this Milwaukee plant, 240 acres. So just absolutely huge. And when you consider Janesville is a much smaller community, impact is even larger. CDC has done almost nothing visible other than demolish these plants. And now, as they're buying this Milwaukee plant, the city of Janesville is trying to buy back the plant or the property in Janesville.
So what's CDC's business? Like, how you just buy old abandoned stuff and let it sit? What do they do with it? How do they make any money?
They're buying power plants, they're buying anything old, they're combining federal remediation funds, and they're trying to redevelop properties. But what they brought to the city of Janesville was essentially not a warehousing operation, but like an intermodal facility. And if you're familiar with where the GM plant is at all in Janesville, it's not the type of place that you'd want to, like, increase the trucking a lot. You'd want a redevelopment that's more mixed use, and that's not what CDC specializes in.
And this is, I mean, when you look across the industrial Midwest, Jeremy, this is not a unique circumstance where we've seen the loss of heavy manufacturing throughout the post-industrial Midwest. There are often large abandoned plants, huge facilities, some of them indeed brownfields or Superfund sites needing environmental remediation. This is not a problem unique to Milwaukee or Janesville or Wisconsin. It's quite prevalent throughout the Midwest. How have other communities tackled it?
It's been in Milwaukee. We have a series of successes. We, of course, have the Menominee Valley to point at, which is a national best case scenario of taking a urban blight, it was a rail yard, and making it into not only a modern industrial hub, but there's a casino there. There's now housing going in. Lots of things happening in the Menominee Valley. We also have in Milwaukee, we have this interesting case, not a typical case, but one that's going to become a national issue, Northridge Mall. And yes. I say national issue because there's malls everywhere that need redevelopment. One company, a Milwaukee company, Phoenix Investors, wanted to buy it and just keep the mall box there, that ugly mall building, and just use it for warehousing. And the city stepped in and said no, and is now redeveloping the whole site. And similar to what we talked about in Janesville, it's all about the context of which these environment or these former industrial sites sit in.
Thanks so much, Jeremy Janine. Now, in a bit of perhaps lighthearted news, I have been reading that we finally got the boat off the beach on Milwaukee's lakeshore. Tell us what's been going on with the immovable, then movable, then another boat got stuck. But now the abandoned boat is finally gone. What went on there, and what's the current status?
My real quick 30-second pitch on what's happening with the boat. Mississippi couple comes up to Wisconsin, buys their retirement home, tries to float it back down to Mississippi. They make it only 100 miles from Manitowoc. They get stuck in Milwaukee. They leave. The boat remains. It's been there since October. A maritime rescue company can't get it out. Three, not one, not two, but three semi-lifting cranes came in today to yank the boat out of the water. And just a couple minutes before I went on air, it was finally up and over these big rocks that have been a real challenge. The beach boat is, it's not no more. It's still there, but it's not beached in the water anymore.
The beach boat unbeached, hopefully finally getting removed. You know, and as Donald Trump burns down the Department of Education, Ron Johnson's proposing all sorts of cuts to Medicaid. I'm so glad that Republicans in this state are busy introducing legislation to prevent the beaching of boats, as if that was something that you actually had to mandate, because everybody wants to beach their boat in the first place. Way to get the priorities straight, GOP here in Wisconsin, led by none other than Robert Voss. My biggest thanks to you, Jeremy Janine. You can catch him here every week with me for Milwaukee as Microcosm. Take care, my friend. Folks, when we come back, we're going to continue with the day's news. Did you know that 150 judges signed on to protest Judge Hannah Dugan's arrest? We're going to discuss that, and I'm going to give you Ron Johnson's exact quote in his attack on Medicaid. All that coming up right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Everybody, I think I'm just going to dub this Weird Tuesday because the news is so weird and it just keeps on coming, ladies and gentlemen. I wanted to start out coming back on this bottom half of this half hour with Ron Johnson's quote about cutting Medicaid. And Ron Johnson, you got to watch what he's saying really carefully, because the man will word salad you. Like, this is the Ron Johnson tactic, and it'll sound real smart, and like certain pieces of it will sound very reasonable, but you got to zoom out and then look at what the man actually just said when you strip away all the niceties and the fancy talk and the lingo. And it's usually pretty shocking. And in fact, just to wet our palates here, I do believe we have a little bit of a Ron Johnson saying crazy stuff montage to remind us all of who we're dealing with here. Let's take a listen.
By the way, standard garbage, mouthwash has been proven to kill the coronavirus. Even if you get it, if you're, you know, you may reduce viral replication.
We're actually in a better position to prevent death by having the climate increase in temperature a little bit, right?
This is out of control. The problem is, Dan, is the American public likes benefits. They love checks, okay?
And my ranking member would always be bringing up white supremacy, which, you know, I condone. I mean, I condemn.
I was not involved in this at all.
I don't feel like my time here has been particularly successful.
Ladies and gentlemen, Senator Ron Johnson. Oh, by the way, didn't know that the drinking age in the state of Wisconsin is 21. Just another tidbit for all of you. Yeah, it's this guy. And let's zoom back out for a second. Remind ourselves, everybody loves checks. Ron, isn't that the whole premise of capitalism? That people love checks? Anyways, Ron Johnson's approach to every single benefit or program that was created after the Great Depression is to zero out its budget. Unemployment insurance, zero it out. Social Security, zero it out. Medicaid, Medicare, zero it out. Get rid of the labor regulations. Get rid of any taxation of capital gains entirely. And make no mistake, ladies and gentlemen, Ron Johnson holds these positions not because they work well for you. Ron Johnson holds these positions, these beliefs, because they'll work well for him. He is a 100 millionaire plus. The guy has purchased jets and written them off as business expenses. He has multiple trusts set up for his various kids. This guy knows how to use the tax code to avoid paying his fair share. And his entire approach to everything that helps support middle-class workers, working families, and older folks, and disabled folks, and vets in this country, his approach is just zero out that budget item and make them, quote, prove up their budgets. He has said, and this was just, again, over the last day, that he wants to see Congress cutting Medicaid. And when asked if he was worried, as some of his colleagues are, even Josh Hawley, remember Mr. Josh Hawley, fist in the air on January 6th, and then ran like a kid to escape those people he was encouraging before the congressional session got in line? Even Josh Hawley thinks these cuts are bad. Ron Johnson said this when asked if he should be concerned, like some of his colleagues are, that cutting Medicaid in this way would be bad for their electoral prospects in 2026. Ron Johnson just said this, quote, they ought to think about the country first and how this level of spending is completely unsustainable. You know what's unsustainable, Mr. Johnson? Trillions of dollars in tax cuts to billionaires and 100 millionaires like yourself. That's what's unsustainable. I'm all for tax cuts for working people, for working families. Why are we taxing income at all if you make $40,000 or less? Right? Like, let's look at that a little bit. You want to ensure Social Security will be funded? Scrap the cap. Start taxing people for the dollars made over, I think, whatever, I forget what the cap is. It's like, your $178,000 dollar doesn't have a Social Security tax applied to it. This is just enraging to me at a very fundamental level. Unacceptable from Senator Johnson. And he continues along this line. And here's why we know this is all a big money grab for the wealthiest among us and the 100 millionaire class that sits in many congressional seats, especially the Republican congressional seats on the Senate side. Because as they're debating the budget reconciliation bill, the budget, last week and now this week, members of the MAGA movement in Congress literally will not participate in debates at all. They are sitting in committees as amendments to the budget are being debated and introduced, and they say nothing. And ladies and gentlemen, boy, is it getting weird. This is Congressman Joe Neguse, who had introduced an amendment in the House Committee on Natural Resources today. Let's take a listen, because, yeah, it's awkward silence.
I never thought I would thank the chairman for opposing my amendment, but just being able to get him to say I oppose the amendment is a start. Mr. Stauber, do you oppose the amendment? You're going to vote on it in like 2 minutes. The country's going to know your position on it.
I remind members to address the remarks to the chair.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, does Mr. Stauber oppose the amendment? I'm directing the remarks towards you. Is that not?
I yield back to, I yield to the ranking member.
Sure. I'm just wondering if the gentleman from Colorado can tell from this angle that Mr. Stauber's working his phone there. His thumb is very nimble. Do you think he's playing Candy Crush or Minesweeper?
I don't know. I again ask members to address the remarks to the
okay.
chair.
Mr. Chairman, I will say it pains me. It pains me because, again, I have great respect for Mr. Stauber and for many of my friends on the other side of the aisle, and I just I have to imagine that they find this as absurd as I do. I mean, I don't. If we are left to, we're now in a position in which Republican colleagues are not allowed to say whether or not they support or oppose an amendment when they will be voting on that amendment a mere few minutes later. I don't think that's how craven this process has gotten. I don't understand. Mr. Chairman, how about this? I'll ask a question. Of course, I don't expect an answer, but was there a formal memo at all issued by Republican leadership in terms of how the hearing should proceed, of members being allowed to answer questions or not answer questions or say whether they support amendments or? Okay, well, you might consider, oh, yeah? Okay, well, then I guess I'll just let the time wind down. Fascinating hearing. I've never seen nothing quite like this. And I yield back the 4 seconds of my time. The
gentleman yields back, Ms. Stansbury, you're recognized.
What?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
What is even happening? My head is perhaps levitating a wee bit off my shoulders. What if our standard for electing people was that they're, like, normies? You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean this at a very basic level. That they'll, you know, explain their positions on amendments, that they'll participate in debates, that they'll very carefully explain to their constituents in town halls. Like, what if these were the things that we used as the litmus test? Forget all of the politics. You're going to show up at town halls. You're going to talk in plain language to your constituents. You're going to listen to what they have to say. You're going to participate in debates when you are in your committee hearings. And you're going to clearly explain why it is you would support cuts for Medicaid that go beyond, well, we should just zero out everything that helps support middle class and working families. It's just an absurdity. And the awkward silences are telling. This isn't normal. These aren't normies. Of course they got a memo that said, don't say anything in any committee meeting, no matter how weird it gets, no matter how awkward, no matter how much you want to squirm around and play Minesweeper or whatever. Maybe it's Fortnite. I don't know. Not my thing. But the fact that we're hearing sound like this from the U.S. Congress, and it's not from the Congress writ large, it's from the MAGAs. And the reason that they will not engage in debate is because there is no defending the position that they're taking. Moreover, the position that they're taking can change from day to day because the infant in chief gets to change his mind whenever the wind blows in a different direction. Reciprocal tariffs today, but not tomorrow. Right, we'll ramp China up to 145% tariffs and we'll act like there's a deal in the offing when Chinese officials are saying we're not even in discussions. We'll say 90 deals in 90 days and then a week later we'll say no deals because we don't need to do any deals. We'll talk about trade as if we don't need to do it, even though the combined impact economic activity that this country experiences, both imports and exports from trade, is $5 trillion worth. We'll let Donald Trump say the most ridiculous, absurd things on planet Earth. We'll let our Secretary of Defense communicate on an unsecure signal chat. And we won't say literally a word in Congress about it. Not one word, not a syllable, not a breath. Because it is indefensible. When you don't know what your policy position is because it gets decided by someone differently every day, and when your policies are at base in impact unacceptable to your voters, what is left but your silence? And they're not silent because they're afraid of Donald Trump. They're silent because they're afraid of you, the good voters of Wisconsin, and the good voters all across the United States. It is truly shameful. And as if the weirdness couldn't get any weirder, Jacob, do we have the sound of Kristi Noem just moments ago? Oh my goodness. Kristi Noem, the Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, you know, the woman that dresses up like a firefighter and like a border security guard and wears a $50,000 watch. Yeah, a little awkward. Jacob, I think you're telling me it's a little long until we're, aha, yes, he is. Jacob and I are now mind melding. So I'm going to set this up and then we're going to take the sound because it is more breaking news on what I'm calling Weird Tuesday today, ladies and gentlemen, more breaking news. We're going to take that sound when we come back. Christy Noem being interviewed, getting asked about due process and citizens getting deported. I would say it's unbelievable, but apparently nothing's unbelievable anymore, including debates where one side just remains silent for the entirety of the debate. Who knew? It's the modern MAGA party. We take a look and listen to Christy Noem when we come back. My name is Maggie Dawn. Keep it locked right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
You're muted, Maggie.
Welcome back, everybody. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm calling it Weird Tuesday because it's weird. There's just incredibly, unbelievably weird things happening that I guess we can't call things weird or unbelievable anymore because it seems to happen every day. Again, yet another congressional hearing, yet another stupid performance by yet another cabinet secretary. This time it's not Scott Bessent. It is Secretary of Homeland Security. The lady that likes to play dress up more than any other Homeland Security secretary I've seen in modern history, none other than Christy Noem. She is in a congressional hearing today being asked questions by U.S. Representative Lauren Underwood. She represents the 14th District in Illinois. She is a smart cookie. Let's see how the battle of wits played out, shall we? Let's take a listen.
It is also violating the fundamental right of individuals. Do you believe that the Constitution grants everyone in our country the right to due process, including non-citizens?
The administration has the authority to...
Ma'am, I'm looking for a yes or no question. Yes or no. Do you believe the Constitution... Yes, ma'am. Do you...
We have
ma'am,
not conducted any
claiming
kind
my time,
of
empowerment. Mr. Chairman.
Time is yours.
Okay. Secretary Noem, I'm just looking for a yes or no here. Do you believe the Constitution guarantees due process to everyone in America?
Due process is exactly what this Congress
yes
lays out.
Yes or no? Okay, ma'am, I'll take that as a no. I'm trying to ascertain your understanding of the law as it applies to your department, and you, as its leader, should be able to give us a yes or no answer because judge after judge has ruled that the law is not being followed. Do you believe that the U.S. government has the authority to deport American citizens?
No, and we are not deporting U.S. citizens.
I'm so happy to hear that you do not believe that the law gives you that authority because the federal government has no authority under U.S. laws to deport any American citizen. And as I know, everyone viewing this hearing today knows that several American citizens have been deported to date. Secretary Noem, that was not a question. Secretary Noem, that oath that we both swore before taking office was to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States, not the president, not a political party, the Constitution. And that's what we're going to keep doing here at the Appropriations Committee. Thank you. I yield back.
Let's just take a minute here. As a point of technical language, absent some very narrow, extraordinarily specific factual circumstances, which are completely inapplicable here, you actually can't deport a citizen of a country. You technically might be able to render them, remove them, or some other, declare them an enemy of the state. You would have to have a legal proceeding to strip them of their citizenship and then therefore deport them. But the idea that the Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security can't simply say that our Constitution guarantees due process to all persons, be they citizens or not, is a dark, dark day. But let me return to the weird moments, the wacky and weird moments of Trump 2.0. And we need only look to the Oval Office in all of its gilded tackiness for more weirdness today. This is Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney and Donald Trump today in the Oval Office. Take a listen.
Well, if I may, as you know from real estate, there are some places that are never for sale.
That's true.
We're sitting in one right now, you know, Buckingham Palace that you visited as well.
That's true. And
having met with the owners of Canada over the course of the campaign, last several months, it's not for sale, won't be for sale ever. But the opportunity is in the partnership and what we can build together. And we have done that in the past. And part of that, as the president just said, is with respect to our own security. And my government is committed for a step change in our investment in Canadian security and our partnership. And I'll say this as well, that the president has revitalized international security, revitalize NATO, and us playing our full weight in NATO, and that will be part
That's
of it.
True.
So the Prime Minister of Canada had to actually say the words, Canada is not for sale. And the U.S. President responded, we'll see. I mean, what? My goodness. Now, just to give you a perspective on how ludicrously unqualified for the presidency Donald Trump is, could you hear Mark Carney like dancing through that minefield there? I mean, it's very, very well said, right? There's some things that you can't buy, like the Oval Office here. That's owned by the United States, Buckingham Palace. Walks really slowly and nicely up to it. Having met with the owners of Canada, meeting the citizens during his most recent campaign, Canada is not for sale, but we reaffirm our commitment to assured security. Hat tip. And then gracious praise that's not totally insane of the president. Yep, we're paying more into NATO. We appreciate the movement that the president has done. Ladies and gentlemen, what you just saw there is actual foreign policy. It's actual presidential leadership. That is an actual adroit politician politicking. That ain't what Donald Trump does. And let me tell you all what Mark Carney was doing before he was elected to the presidency of Canada. He was a technocrat. He was like a numbers guy. This guy is totally inexperienced until this moment, and he's running circles, verbal circles, thinking circles around Donald J. Trump. Ladies and gentlemen of Wisconsin and America, we deserve better. We deserve somebody a little bit like Mark Carney. When we come back, we got the top of the hour. Going to be digging in with Jim Santel, former U.S. attorney. We're going to talk about the D.C. U.S. attorney appointment from Donald Trump. Keep it locked right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.